Welcome to the Mach 1 Market Moment Podcast with the team at Mach 1 Financial Group. The Mach 1 Market Moment Podcast starts now.
Hello again and welcome. This is the Mach 1 Market Moment. I'm your co-host, Steve Gramsci, with the CEO and founder of Mach 1 Financial Group, David Lee, serving you in Northwest Arkansas. And you can find them online at Mach1Financial.com. And this phone number, I'll give it to you again a little bit later on, but it is 479-876-2100. It's a good number to get in your own requests if you have questions for David Lee or even Kyle Alexander, part of the team today. So let's tackle a couple of those in the mailbag if you are ready, Mr. Lee.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's go to Floyd, who writes in from Rogers. And Floyd says, I recently turned 50, which means I can start contributing more money to my 401k each year. Should I do this or not?
It's a good question, Floyd. And the answer is, I hate to use this answer, but it's true. The answer is it depends. It depends on how much you've already got in your 401k. It depends on other factors such as does your employer match your contributions or not. So let me just try to give you the short answer. The short answer is I believe that you should contribute to your 401k to the extent that your employer matches you. So what do I mean by that? Let's say that your employer matches the first 6% of your contribution. So if you make $100,000, you put in $6,000, 6% of your pay, they'll match you that full $6,000 contribution that you're making during the year. You should definitely always max out the match. Don't ever leave free money on the table. So if you're not already doing that, you should be doing that at a minimum. But then kind of the rest of the answer to that story, and that is it possible to have too much, counterintuitively, is it possible to have too much in an IRA or 401k? And I would argue that the answer is yes, because it depends on what happens in the future to tax rates. Because whether you realize it or not, money that you have in a 401k or an IRA is not fully yours. Even though your name is the only one on that statement that you get each month or each quarter, it's not fully your money. It's partially owned by you and Uncle Sam.
That's right, because not only is your name on there, but so is your Social Security number.
That's right. That's right. So the proper perspective to have on an IRA or 401k is that it's not fully your money. It's partially owned by you and partially by the government. And so if you have a whole lot of money in that 401k, you're potentially setting yourself up for a tax trap in the future. Because what if 10 years, 15, 20 years down the road, due to budget problems, debt problems, demographic problems relative to Social Security and Medicare, what if the Congress decides that tax rates need to go up, and not just up, but way up? Now you're at a point in life where you're now retired and you're taking withdrawals out of that 401k, and every dollar you take out is taxable at whatever the current tax brackets are that are in force in that time in the future. So you could be setting yourself up into a tax trap because you're putting more and more money each year into a tax-deferred retirement plan. Yes, you're getting a tax deduction in the current year for that, but you're essentially at Uncle Sam's mercy saying, hey, I'll put this money in here and you tell me what kind of tax rate I'm going to pay on this in the future when I draw it out.
Now, to your point, would you then recommend that maybe instead of continuing to put extra in the 401k, that maybe he open up a Roth and put that extra money in a Roth?
Absolutely. So for example, to your point, let's say that you were contributing 10% of your pay and your employer's only matching 6. Like I said, never leave the free money on the table. So reduce your contribution down to 6, take that extra 4% that you were going to put into your 401k and put it into a Roth IRA. Now, if you make too much money to put it into a Roth, and what I mean by that is there are certain income limits where the government says if you make over approximately $189,000 a year for a married filing jointly couple.
That's happened to me many times.
What's that?
That's happened to me a lot. I, you know, made well over $189,000. I couldn't put any money away.
There you go. So if you make too much money, the government says a Roth IRA is too good of a deal for you. Anytime the government says you can't have something because it's too good of a deal, you know you should have it. So if you're over 189, then there's a backdoor way to get money into that Roth. You you put up to $5,500 into a traditional IRA, or if you're over 50, $6,500 into the traditional, and then you turn around and convert that to a Roth, because there's no limit on your income to being able to do a Roth conversion. If you're under that $189,000 limit, then it's much easier. You just simply take that extra 4% or whatever it was going to be that was going to be going into the 401k, and you just put it directly into a Roth. You don't get a tax deduction for that, but down the road, you're going to be set up in a much more secure place, because every dollar that's in a Roth is fully yours. It's not partially owned by you and the government, whereas every dollar that's in a 401k or an IRA is not fully yours. It's partially owned by the government and partially owned by you. The problem is you don't know what percent is the government's until they tell you 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
Well, and what you've just said makes a lot of sense there. And there's someone who is listening is going, wait a minute, that's a lot for me to remember. Well, number one, that's the reason you're listening to this show. Number two, it's the reason that you need to have a partner in making your plan. So by calling Mach 1 Financial Group at 479-876-2100, have that discussion. We're in the mailbag. We're answering questions, Floyd. I hope that helped. Let's go to Helen in Bentonville. Helen says, is it okay to have several different IRAs, or should I consolidate? I have seven accounts, says Helen.
Well, Helen, it's certainly okay in the terms, or in the sense that it's legal, right? I mean, you can definitely have multiple IRAs. It just may not be the most efficient way to have your money managed, because especially if those accounts are held at seven different institutions and you don't have one overall advisor or one overall plan among those accounts. So you could have several of those accounts that are doing the same thing, i.e. there's could be lack of diversification among those seven different accounts, or they just may not be coordinated in a very good way to where the advantages of one of those accounts is kind of offsetting the disadvantages of one of the others. So I'm an advocate of consolidation, because number one, it makes your job easier as the owner of those IRAs to manage and monitor them. Instead of getting seven different statements from seven different companies, you get one. So it makes your job of monitoring what's going on a lot easier. And it also allows you the opportunity, by consolidating, it allows you the opportunity to have an overall plan to have those different accounts coordinated in a better way, so that you've got a portion of the money that's set aside for safety, a portion that's participating in the market but has some downside protection, a portion that's not correlated to the market, different things like that. That's what you want to have for a truly coordinated, truly diversified investment portfolio. Is you want to have different pieces of the portfolio that by design do different things at different times. They make money in different ways. They generate returns in different types of environments, so that regardless of what market environment we find ourselves in, you're going to have a high probability of a positive overall rate of return.
Sometimes in those products, too, there are some nuances in those products that make it really hard to tell the difference between, you know, like things. And so it's another reason to have somebody who already has the expertise in that say, but oh, wait a minute, this one does that and this one does this just a little bit different. Hope that helped you, Helen. Howard is in, where is you? Howard?
Pineville.
Where is you, Howard? He's in Pineville. All right, Howard, thanks for writing in. Let's answer his question. I think we have time for this one more. I've heard that it's wise to roll over my 401k after leaving my job. So that's what I've always planned to do. But that account has been doing really well for the last several months, so I'm hesitant to make any changes to it. David, should I just leave it alone?
Well, Howard, the answer once again here is it depends. Now, first of all, I need to address the part of your question where you said it's been doing really well over the last several months, so therefore should I leave it alone? Just because an account's been doing well is not in itself justification for doing nothing, because the primary reason that the account's been doing well over the last several months is the market's been doing well. When the market does well, chances are that whatever you're invested in is going to be doing well. So the more important question to ask is, how much could I lose if and when the market starts to go the other way? Is there any kind of defined amount of money or defined percent of your account value that is at risk if the market goes down 10, 20, 30%? I'm not saying that I'm betting that we're going to have a recession or a correction anytime soon. We may not. Markets have always had risk. Markets will always have risk. What if North Korea does something crazy in the near future? What if Congress fails to pass tax reform or fails to do anything to fix Obamacare? Those are all things that the market has been betting on ever since the election. And if those things don't come to pass, I think there's a good chance the market will reset valuations to reflect that new reality. In other words, the market would, you know, probably make a pretty decent correction to the downside if some of those promises that were campaigned on don't come to fruition. So we've got political risk, we've got geopolitical risk, but there's always been risk in the market. So the primary reason that your 401k has been doing well is because the market's been doing well, but you need to understand what, how much risk you're taking if the market goes down 10, 20, 30%. And that's where, you know, having a diversified, risk mitigated total portfolio put together can make a significant difference. Because let's face it, when you have a 401k, who is the, generally speaking, who is the portfolio manager of your 401k?
You
think
be.
About that.
You should be.
Yeah. The client is, right? The owner of the 401k. It's their responsibility to go in there and figure out what the investment options are that are available to them and pick.
But I don't know how to do that.
Exactly. But most people aren't qualified to do that and certainly don't know when they should move from this strategy to that strategy. So that those are all reasons why, you know, it makes good sense, in my opinion, to roll over your 401k when you're eligible to do so, for example, after leaving a job or whatever. So yeah, if you're eligible to roll over your 401k, the odds are high that you should do that. What would be the cons or the negatives of rolling it over? It may be slightly more expensive as far as fees and expenses, as far as, you know, having your 401k managed versus leaving it in your 401k. It's probably not going to be significantly more, and it may not even be any more. It depends on your particular plan. But the reason why I say it, the odds are it'd be perhaps slightly more expensive than leaving it in your 401k is because if you're the manager of your 401k currently and you pay someone else to manage it for you and monitor it daily and manage it, naturally it's always going to cost more to have someone else do a job for you than doing it yourself. But if you have a professional doing it for you, odds are it'll get done better because of the daily monitoring than, you know, having you do that yourself when you're just trying to go to work and do the best job that you can for your employer, or if you're self-employed for yourself, as opposed to having someone whose job, who's in this line of work, whose job it is and whose education is in portfolio management, having someone like that doing the job for you, as opposed to doing it yourself, you tend to get a lot of value out of that.
Financial planning is so frustrating for people who are self-reliant. We don't want somebody else to do things for us. We want to handle it. We want to touch it. We want to make it work and execute it. And it's one of those things in life that really seems to be almost impossible to be able to do correctly unless you have somebody who's doing it for a living, like yourself.
Yep. Yep. I agree.
Well, that's your mailbag. We'll hopefully give you a few nuggets of wisdom to think about. And if you have questions on your own, feel free to submit them. You can find us online at Mach1Financial.com. David, what happens briefly when I make that call and I want to get together with you?
Yeah, good question. So if you call our number, 876-2100, you'll speak to one of my secretaries, typically, that'll be picking up the phone, and they'll just figure out what's a convenient time for us to meet together. When you come in to meet with me, there's no charge for that appointment. So you don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, you know, what's this going to cost me? Is this, you know, and am I going to get roped into doing something that I don't want to do? You don't have to worry about any of that. What I'll do is I'll spend about an hour and a half with you determining, trying to, you know, getting to know who you are, figuring out what your goals are. Cause everybody's goals are slightly different to on one hand, you know, a lot of people have a lot of the same goals. You know, they want to retire at some point in time in the future, go see grandkids, spend more time with family, whatnot. But everybody's goals are slightly different. So I figure out, you know, what's important to you? What are you trying to accomplish? Then we'll do a complimentary retirement analysis after collecting some data from you to figure out, okay, well, based on where you are today and where you want to get to, what your goal is, we'll figure out what's the least risk way to get there. So a lot of times what I'll tell people is this whole financial planning thing is not that complicated on one level. It's very much like if we're here in Northwest Arkansas and we want to chart a course to drive to Dallas or North Carolina, we would figure out what's the shortest course to get there, what's the safest path to get there on. And if we want to be in Dallas by, 5 p.m. this evening, we would figure out what's the speed we would have to travel at. Well, if we want to be to Dallas in an hour, we're going to have to drive it. It's unrealistic that we're going to be able to get from Northwest Arkansas to Dallas in that short of a time period, unless we're in an airplane or something. But assuming we're in a car, we're not going to be able to safely get there by that time. So what we do with the retirement analysis is figure out kind of your financial GPS position. Where are you today as far as age and assets that you've accumulated and the pace at which you're accumulating assets, i.e. how much are you contributing to your 401k? How much is your employer matching? That determines where you are financially speaking today and how much money do you spend each month to live life at your desired lifestyle. Then we factor in things like future taxes, inflation, et cetera, to figure out, okay, well, is it, if you want to retire by age 65 or 62 or whatever the age is, we figure out what rate of speed do you need to travel at to arrive at that destination on time. Rate of speed in financial terms is rate of return, right? So the higher the rate of return required to get there on time is going to require a higher risk portfolio. The lower rate of return required to get there on time requires a lower risk portfolio. So we help you determine the rate of speed at which you're going to have to travel, and then what's the least risk total portfolio way to achieve that desired rate of speed that your portfolio is going to travel at. Wow. So that's what we do. That's all complimentary. We'll help you figure that out and answer those questions and then put together a portfolio, a recommendation of a total portfolio that would help you achieve that goal. And then you can decide from there whether you want to buy our solution or whether you want to take it and continue to do things on your own. Either way, that's your decision, but you're not going to get pressed into doing something that you don't want to do. So it's a very low pressure way. Thank the Lord. We've been in business for 12 years. We've got a lot of clients and we're in a good position. Thank the Lord. But there's no pressure to come in and see us. And hopefully we can help you figure out what your goals are and help you figure out how to get there.
Thank you for that explanation. I'm going to close this segment by saying this. David, you're the pilot. I'm the passenger. You're flying the plane, and I'm trusting you to do it by calling 479-876-2100. 479-876-2100. Don't put it off. If you're in Northwest Arkansas, Retirement Income Planning Specialists, Mach 1 Financial Group. This has been the Mach 1 Market Moment.
Investment advisory services are offered through Capel Advisory Solutions, LLC. Doing business as Fusion Capital Management, an SEC-registered investment advisor. The firm only transacts business in states where it is properly registered or is excluded or exempted from registration requirements. SEC registration is not an endorsement of the firm by the Commission and does not mean that the advisor has attained a specific level of skill or ability.